You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hi, this is Jill Chenault, and this is our Virgin broadcast of Uppity. And the reason it's called Uppity is because I have been black all my life and a woman, and that used to be a verb that was described to, that was used by people who were attempting to keep us down. And it was supposed to be an insult, but I kind of like it. So, and I'm with me here today are two wonderful people. Nicole Christian is a recovering journalist, a writer, and a creativity instigator. Tell us more about that, Nicole, the creativity instigator part.
I like to get things started with words, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Ideas take people to places they don't necessarily know they're capable of going.
Okay. All right. And we also have Donna McKay, who is an IT project manager and a fitness entrepreneur, which means that she's just a badass because she got her own gym. Tell us about your gym, Donna.
My gym is called My Good Life Fitness Studio. Emphasis on the good life, right? Mm-hmm. It is in Southfield. I opened it in 2005, a long, long time ago. And basically, it is women-focused, where, you know, women in their 20s to 70s. My oldest client now is 77 years
old. Wow.
She's a badass.
Yeah, that's a badass.
And we help people just to live a good life. And so we're not trying to be bodybuilders or do competitions. We're just trying to be strong in the things that we do every day and look good doing it.
Okay. All right. Well, the reason why I wanted to create this podcast, just by way of a backstory, is that I think that women of a certain age, real live grown-ass women hovering around 50-something, maybe a little bit less, I feel like we're underrepresented among podcasts. And I think that our perspective is unique and very, very valuable, not just to us and not just to black people, but to anybody with good sense. So that being said, I've got a couple of questions. I don't want to actually interview you guys. This is going to be a conversation between friends.
I love that you think we have good sense. This is going to be fun.
No, I said I hope that the people who listen have good sense and want to listen to us. I'm not. I certainly can't vouch for myself as having good sense. I had enough sense to get here, but that's all I can promise right now. So, Donna, when you were growing up, did you know a lot of black women that did not work outside their home?
I did. I grew up in a small community in Romulus, Michigan called Jones Sub. But it's Jones Sub.
Okay.
Right. And it was a community of, actually, I didn't even know I lived in a project. It was a low income housing project, but we didn't know it was a project because, you
know, we're happy.
And, you know, yeah, most of the families there are on assistance. They're mostly single moms. My elementary school was all black, only all black elementary school in Romulus, with the highest test scores, by the way.
All right.
And yeah, most of the moms stayed at home, including my mom.
Wow.
Yep.
And you ended up going to college and then going to school some more, and then getting a whole bunch of mystical, magical certifications so you could be a project manager.
And a personal trainer.
And a personal trainer. What do you think motivated you to do all that, to achieve all the things that you've achieved thus far?
It was very simple. It was one specific event. You ready?
Yeah.
My mother told me on my first day of preschool that I would go to college.
Really?
And my mother told me that one day her dream was to see my name on a building.
Really?
Wow.
And a few years ago, I pulled up to my building and looked at the sign, and there was a picture of me on a building.
Now, wait. Tell us. You got to tell the audience what you mean by your building. And listen closely, y'all, because this really is her building.
So I rented a gym from a very nice Greek family. Really, really nice Greek family.
Yasu Kuklo.
I love them. I rented it from them about, I guess, in 2005. And that's an interesting story. We'll talk about that later if you like. But they wanted to retire. They had been there 35 years. And so they practically gave me the building.
Wow.
I own the building.
Wow. So you own the building
own
now.
Own the building.
All right, Nicole. I don't want you to think that you've escaped my notice.
I don't own a building. I have no plans to own a building.
But you're a recovering journalist.
Yes.
What does that mean?
That means that my career, I spent more than 25 years in newspapers and thought that I would die in newspapers. You know, that would be the thing I did when I died. And no one ever thought newspapers would get to a point where they were not dominant, you know, not the thing that we went to learn about the state of our times, the state of, you know, where we've been, where we're going. And suddenly this thing happened where the industry ran into this thing called the internet. Long story short, layoffs, and my career became a part of that story.
Wow. What papers did you work for?
I worked for the St. Petersburg Times, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine.
So she ain't no joke, y'all.
Damn.
Yeah, exactly. She ain't no.
The Detroit Free Press. I finished
think
my career.
I invited
at the
you?
Free Press.
Yeah. I wasn't. We ain't gonna have no scrubs on the show.
Yeah, I came back to Detroit and after I was part of the 9/11 coverage team for the New York Times and mm-hmm. came back home to start a family and to work at my hometown newspaper, and ironically, it's where my career ended, or I like to say where I got liberated.
Right. Right. And now you're freelancing.
Yes, I am.
Good. That's wonderful.
Just repackaging skills and interests and passions and using that innate Detroit hustle.
Detroiters do hustle.
Hard.
So my first real question is, have film and television depictions of us, Black women, changed over the past 20 years? And if so, how? Nicole?
I like to think that they have, but you know, if you follow, I love Viola Davis, and I think she has really been great about being candid about, despite the success she's had lately, some of the things are still the same. So from her perspective as an actress, but the depictions, I don't think are as deep as we are, mm-hmm. because if you remember, she made her bones playing what? A maid, a housekeeper.
Yeah.
And she said recently that that's not even a position. That's not even a role she wanted. It's not her proudest role. She would have done it differently. So I think, you know, we're still trying to catch up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see us more vividly. And I think clearly Black Panther, you know, mm-hmm. gave us a chance to really look and just like take a deep dive into our own beauty. But we're so much more than we ever get allowed to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think we're portrayed as a monolith rather than a diverse group of women?
Of course we are. That's how we see. Until you can tell the story, until you can control your story, the story is always
Absolutely.
Sort of half. Mm-hmm. When you're at the levers, then you hold the whole story. Mm-hmm. So we're nowhere near. I mean, you have people like Oprah and Ava. I don't want to massacre her last name, so I'm going to say Ava. There we go. Ava D. I think clearly they're coming along and doing things that sort of give us, and they're not alone. I just don't have a list in front of me, but that's still a very small percentage.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think I disagree probably with a lot of people because I don't think there's a narrow depiction. I don't think there's one depiction of who we are. I want to see a day when we get to be complex, where we get
Absolutely.
We get to exist in contradictions.
Right.
Because to be a Black woman, that's not a single sentence.
No.
We're many things. So I think until we have many people telling our stories, we're either not there, or when we are there, we're reduced into easy depictions.
Donna, do you think that reduction is intentional or incidental? Or is it because the people who are making the decisions, green lighting projects, casting, is it a reflection of their attitudes toward us, or is it a truly intentional effort to define us to the general public?
I believe that it is probably some of both, right?
Yeah.
I think that the people who are greenlighting these projects probably really don't know a lot of mm-hmm. Black women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I am encouraged, though, that we aren't just shown as objects of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're not always naked.
Right.
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 Sometimes
we were
are,
naked in the 70s.
Girl, we were.
We
naked
was
a
naked,
lot.
Naked all the time. Yeah.
And, you know,
we're still kind of naked. Yeah.
Naked, or we're selling chicken, or we're selling pine saw. Yeah.
Or we fight.
Kind of thing.
But there's progress. Pulling out weave.
Yeah,
yeah, there's right? progress.
But you know, absolutely. Like, there's I think progress. About, like, a Shonda Rhimes. Mm-hmm. And obviously,
forgive
Oprah.
Me, Shonda. I didn't miss
right. that. Right. No, no problem. And then, you know, I was listening to Michelle Obama's book and mm-hmm. how much she's done to help everyone mm-hmm. Understand another definition, another version of Black women.
Yeah.
And so, but back to your point, I think it's probably some of both. They yeah. have no idea. They don't know.
You know, Viola Davis and her husband have formed their own production company.
Yeah.
Awesome. And they just signed a major deal with Netflix, I think it is. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to seeing what mm-hmm. they what they actually do.
Yeah, and I heard just today, or maybe it was last night, that she is actually going to do Shirley Chisholm's story.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Unbought Boston.
Yeah.
Hey.
Wow. Exactly. I'm really looking forward
so,
to that,
so
too.
My favorite role of Viola Davis was in Antoine Fisher.
Oh, girl. She didn't even say nothing.
She
didn't even
say
nothing. Did I tell you I was an extra in that?
Yeah, I saw you.
Nicole, did you know I was an extra?
I saw you. I saw your sleeve.
I was living... I was a crackhead, and I was such a good crackhead that security kept asking me to leave the set and stop going to the craft services table because I was
and
eating.
That could be an episode, Jill. Come on, as a crackhead.
I took eyelash glue and put it in the corners of my mouth and up under my nose and in the corners of my eyes, and I was just unkempt. I French braided half of my head. The other half was just out. And they give you, even when you're just an extra, which is like being furniture, basically.
Right.
You're in the background.
Right,
and they call you background. They still give you credentials to hang around your neck. And then when they call you to set, you just tuck those in. Ah. The security guy finally, the third time he came over and said, Miss, you'll have to. And then he's like, oh, man, that's you again. You know what? You need to just keep your credentials outside your shirt. Don't tuck it in because I'm going to keep coming over here trying to throw you out.
We cannot control her.
Right. But and I was a good crackhead, too. And it's the scene when Antoine is arriving at his mother's building with his uncle, and he's telling the uncle, you know, I think I'm going to go on in. And his uncle is telling him, you'll be all right. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to watch you. I'm not going to let anything happen to you. But for those who didn't see the movie or didn't see Viola Davis's scene, or most likely didn't recognize her.
Did not recognize her.
Because she's acting her ass off. She played Antoine Fisher's mother, and... she does not recognize him initially, and then she finally does, and then they go into her living room. His uncle has left him with her alone, and they go into her living room, and he's telling her what a good man he's grown up to be, how he doesn't have any kids, he doesn't do drugs, he doesn't smoke, he's in the Navy, you know, he's accomplishing all of that, and then he asks her, why didn't you come back for me? Which is, you know, I'm not going to start crying on the radio, but... it is heartbreaking. And when he leans over and kisses her on the cheek... one tear rolls down her face. And I thought they were going to have to carry me out the theater. I was so through. She messed me up.
She did.
Mastery.
Yeah. And she didn't even say anything. It was just that one. She kind of blinked when he kissed her, like she winced. But then that one tear came down. And I thought, Lord. And that, you know, that was Denzel's acting debut also. That was the first. Yeah, that was the first time he had directing
I'm like,
debut.
Acting.
No,
I was about to say
that was
his, glory.
No, I'm sorry. That was his directing debut.
Some
he had bought the
show.
He had bought the rights to the story, and so I was living here in Detroit, and I heard that they were shooting here. I mean, in Cleveland, and in my mind, that means that I should be in it because they're right in Cleveland. That's how. That's what 2-3 hours away. I can get to Cleveland, and a friend of mine. Good friend who was really looking out for me said, I know somebody who's working on that set. I'm going to call him and see what we can do. And he managed to get me a spot.
Wow.
Among the extras. And I had to walk up and down. In one scene, I had to walk up and down the street about 59 times with an honest to goodness pimp named Good Game.
Good Game.
Good Game.
I remember that.
Yep. Good game. If you out there, I still love you. I ain't going to let you turn me out. But he was so charming.
Another episode.
And it was really, really cold. So you get to know a person when you're really, really cold. And
if
you
were a pimp, you probably
need to
be charming.
And he was a pimp. He had his pimp cup, you know, the glass they bring that's all decorated with and bedazzled and bejeweled.
He had a pimp. He wasn't a real pimp. They don't care. Carry those glasses for real, do they? I don't think they do.
Good Game did, and I assure you this man was a pimp. For real. I gave him my number.
Pimps, if you're out there, let us know if you carry cups.
Let us know if you carry cups, because we want to know. And who decorates your cups? Do you do it yourself, or does one of your girls do it?
Or is there like a pimp decorating cup factory
exactly.
somewhere?
Exactly.
A pimp cupping entrepreneur. another show.
But it was very exciting, and she was excellent.
But, you know, to stay with her for just a moment, it's not just the mastery of craft. She's also using her platform because mm-hmm. she's won awards and she's got the limelight right now. And what is she doing with it? She's talking about the deficit that she doesn't want to be the only one,
mm-hmm.
that there's no comfort in this day and age in being the only one.
Exactly.
So that's, I mean, I applaud her for her craft, but I'm telling you, if you get a platform.
Michael B. Jordan
yeah.
started a production company,
yeah.
and he was one of the first owners of a production company to say, look, if you want to work with me, this is how many people you got to have a diverse
exactly.
crew behind the camera. I'm not going to work with you otherwise.
Yeah.
And he's riding the wave right now pretty mm-hmm. well. He's, you know, I remember when he was on All My Children. Do you remember that? Jackson Montgomery adopted him.
No.
His name was Reggie. Jackson Montgomery was one of Erica's many boyfriends slash husbands, Erica Kane. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no. Jill Chanel has a file cabinet for memory.
And he was on there. He was on All My Children. And then he was Wallace on The Wire. And Bodie and Pooh killed him. You don't remember that?
No.
And he was begging. He was begging. He peed on himself and they humiliated him for that. And then they just shot him all up.
Dang.
And I was crying. It was horrible.
And
now he's like this grown ass man. Yeah. Now he's Killmonger and Apollo.
So, and Apollo.
And Apollo. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel, you know, you
Adonis.
See somebody so, yeah, I'm sorry, Adonis.
He's Adonis. Yeah.
You see somebody so much over the years that mm-hmm. you kind of feel like you know him, but you don't.
That's true.
I think if I saw him, I don't think I could be trusted to act like I had good sense. Because I feel like he's not my son, but he's my son.
He's your nephew.
He's my nephew.
He's your nephew.
He's my nephew.
Because,
and I'm,
you know,
so proud of him.
They call us auntie anyway.
That's true. He's my nephew. And I remember when he had braces and, you know, when he had cornrows. And now he's this grown man on the cover of GQ with a damn wolf.
Grown ass man.
Grown ass man.
I've not seen that with a wolf. Wow.
Yeah, with a wolf.
Is the wolf cute?
The wolf is cute. He said it last, I was listening to him on some talk show when he was doing press for Creed 2. And he said that when he arrived, they told him, okay, here's the wolf. He looks like a dog and a wolf, but he's like 97% wolf. Whatever you do, don't look him in the eye. And he said at one point he did try to like sneak and look the wolf in the eye, and the wolf punked him.
Mm.
He looked at the wolf and the wolf was like, what? Well, I'm a wolf. And he looked away.
You don't
looked
want
down.
None of this.
Yeah, you don't want to fool with the, I don't care
why
who
I
you
asked
are.
The question because I knew you would have an answer.
Okay. Now, do you think that these media depictions of us, even though it's improved somewhat, do you think that they influence American culture a great deal, or vice versa, or both? What? Crickets.
Do.
You do?
I do.
Why do you think so, Donna?
Have you ever heard of butt injections?
You know,
American history and butt injections.
Butt
Here
injections.
We go.
Do you remember?
Have you ever heard of white women wearing weave?
Well. I think that's been around for a minute. I think it just kind of came to the forefront. But I think it's more prominent now that we said,
absolutely.
Look, you want some more hair? This is what you do.
And this is my thing, you know, and I'm into women, right? Because I train women and I'm looking at them all mm-hmm. the time. But you know what? How blessed are we to be able to be whoever we want to be in 2018 and 19 or whatever, right? Whoever you want to be, you can be that person.
But I do think that if you have your own booty that is God-given, that's a legacy from mm-hmm. your mama and your grandma, if you have your own pronounced breasts, whatever, mm-hmm. you should get a tax break.
Oh.
You should get a tax break because anybody can go
candidates
out.
Candidates running for president, the presidential candidates to be, let it be known that in Detroit we will be looking for...
But anybody can go pay
a platform
for it.
That allows
anybody
a booty,
can go buy one.
How should we frame it? A booty tax cut?
A booty tax,
tax
cut.
Break.
You need a booty tax break. Maybe a cut. A cut too. But yeah, like a rebate and a cut. If you grew your own stuff, or if you've always rocked
so
your
let me
own
tell you
stuff.
What, for those wondering, we all have college degrees. We do.
Listen, but from a personal trainer and a health professional or health whatever entrepreneur. We probably need to be taxed more because that butt is causing us a lot in insurance, right? Because that butt is an indicator of high blood pressure and
really?
Hypertension. Heck yeah.
But you know, it's stereotypical
lower
because not all of us have, you know, I'm not speaking for anybody I know. If my friends are listening, stop laughing. Not all of us have that stereotypical big black butt.
I used to have a big black butt. I had a nice big round booty. And then
round booty
to New York,
is different than just big.
Oh,
big
no, I'm talking
ass.
About roundness.
Right.
I'm not talking about
you're
just
talking
like
about,
a big ass.
I'm talking about big asses, which
about health nightmare.
Yeah.
Our
black men love, right?
Oh, they do.
Oh, yeah. A million women come in and say, yeah, I'm working. My husband said he don't want me to lose my booty. I'm like, well, you need to go someplace else because we're going to lose all that. You can tighten it up.
Mm-hmm. And I think the fat part is the problem, not the size itself. If it's a big, I had a large muscular booty.
Muscular booties.
And in 2003,
get a tax break.
I moved to New York.
Big fat asses?
No.
You got to pay more in taxes.
Okay.
Because Obamacare going to have to spend more on you.
Well, I was walking so much in New York and climbing so many stairs and everything because I was working as a dog walker that it just got rounder and firmer. Mm-hmm. And then I came back here 19 months into my captivity here in Michigan, in Lansing. My booty is gone. It's gone. And I'm very disappointed. So I've seen both sides of this issue. Yeah. And I must say, I prefer Bootylicious over I look like somebody made a frog stand up.
You have never like had a fat ass.
No, but I miss my big round butt.
Big round booty is good. Fat ass, not good.
No, not good at all. In fact, would you care to discuss the Free the Booty movement that we had with one of our friends who shall remain nameless, but come on now. She know who she is.
Yeah, she knows who she is.
And she has a little bitty waist, like a 20. She had like a 24, 26 inch waist and 40 something inch hips. You could put a plate of food on her booty and she could walk around and you would not lose a morsel.
So this is a natural big booty, but not a fat ass. We'll make a distinction.
Right. Yeah,
right? This is a natural big booty and hips.
Yeah. Let it be clear.
Yeah, we need to make a distinction because you know people get that mixed up, and you know.
No,
and
this is just all booty.
So my version of the story is our dear friend was going on a vacation in Bahamas.
Oh Lord!
So we, as her good girlfriends, went to go and try on bathing suits.
She wanted something cute,
right? Mm-hmm. So. It was Jill Chenault who her superpower is her breast size, to be totally honest, and our wonderful friend that had the big booty. And then here I am in the middle. So we all come out. We try to get these bathing suits. We go in the dressing room. We all come out trying our bathing suits. So there's Jill who's looking like this, you know, big buxom beauty.
Oh, Lord.
And then there's the other, our dear friend, who has this big booty that, you know, just bam. And then I'm standing in the middle looking like a boy. And I said that, standing between them looking at them like, I look like a boy.
That's not true. That's just Donna's version of
events. But then the other part of the story is Jill, she tells our friend that she needs to wear that particular bathing suit on the beach.
It looked really good and it featured her booty.
And she is to walk down the beach and then turn around and say, they're missing this in Detroit.
They're wondering when I'm gonna bring it back. That's what she was. I told her, just walk, don't parade back and forth. Just walk by, and then when somebody is within earshot,
as they will be.
Yeah, and they would be paying attention. Then she was supposed to turn around and say that.
And we are so glad this
she would
audio
walk backwards
experience because to be with Jill, this is being told with a straight face.
Oh yeah, this was very serious business.
Very
I called it the Free the Booty movement because she had been shamed so much when she was a kid, and I think a lot of us go through that especially when we're around predominantly white people who do not appreciate the booty, especially as children. She grew up trying to hide it. And we were telling her, I told her if I had an ass like that, I'd walk every place backwards. You wouldn't see me walking forward. And I tell Donna all the time, if I had Donna's body, I'd just walk around naked with a cute little purse and some cute shoes. Because Donna has no body fat and got curves. So, and big legs. I got my daddy's legs.
Lord, I got my mom and my grandmother's legs.
So, Nicole.
I have none of those. I'm booty free.
Unburdened by the booty.
Yes.
But you would never get like silicone injections or anything like that. Would you? Would you?
No.
Do you think the people who do that is that a form of cultural appropriation?
Well, see, you know what? This is going to get me in trouble. I just don't believe in I don't think one thing means just one thing. So I don't approve of it. It's not something I want to do because I tend to believe what I came here with, if I work it well, is mine and I can make it work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what floats your boat, I don't know. I mean, I look on the other side of the screen. I guess I'm answering the question from, I don't see a lot of black women doing it. I mean, I don't see black women going to get extra lips, extra hips, extra, but I just, I just don't. Even those who aren't they as stereotypically endowed. But if you do, you know what? Why can't we?
But those
why do we
who
put
do,
ourselves...
I'm talking about non-black women, non-black people being surgically altered to resemble the prototypic or stereotypic, if you will, black woman.
Well, I mean, I think you have to go way back to slavery days.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's a longer show. Hell, that's probably a book. But you have to go way back to slavery days. That was sort of, we were commodities. We were 3/5 human.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that we came here with our bodies, we were what's called chattel.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that's a form of animalistic. So everything about us, you have to go way back. But I think by the same token, we have an obligation when we get the platform not to put those things out there and not to lead with those
things.
Yeah, not to lead with those things and not to profit off of what's been used to demean us.
Right.
And so that conversation becomes sort of primary to me. If I've got a platform, I've got an obligation.
It's like a Real Housewives conversation.
Absolutely.
Girl, bye.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But I think, though,
and I'm not going to tune into that. So that's.
Yeah, I've never watched it. Mm-mm. But even when I've seen them, you know, if I'm watching something and they happen, watching a talk show and one of them happens to be a guest, I'm always appalled at their willingness to get on TV and act a fool for the check, the attention, whatever. Yeah. And there are men signing up for that nonsense.
And I like to think maybe that's who they are as individuals. But we're in a culture where if a black woman does whatever or a black man does whatever, then your action speaks for the whole race.
Yeah.
Until in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people are just like screwed up in black skin.
Mm-hmm. Just as much as anybody else.
Yep.
We got as many fools as anybody else does.
And we should be allowed to have our share.
We should be allowed to have our fools and not have that fool imposed on the rest of us or become an expectation for the rest of us.
Yeah, like I've always said, I can't. When in rooms where I'm the only one, I know there's a certain expectation and I carry it, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable with being represented. But I also know I can't speak for everyone because that would be insulting. That would be to assume that we're narrow. We're deep.
Yeah, we're not monolithic.
No, absolutely. No. We are deeper than we'll ever be allowed to be and sometimes deeper than we even see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's deep.
Deep.
Now, as for cultural appropriation, I'm going to tell you what happened to me recently and how I reacted, and it might not be
what
good.
What
had happened was I walked into a new gym to see what it was like. And this is in Lansing, Ingham County. And the gym was co-owned by two people, a man and a woman. And the woman came over to me and was talking about the gym and the services that they offer. During the conversation, she peppered the conversation with, girl, and this happened several times. Mm-hmm. Now, I just went in there to find out about the weights and the classes and all that. And eventually when she came to the point where she was supposed to really pitch membership or pitch something to me, she gave me her business card. And I said, that whole girl thing, don't do that. That's inappropriate. It offends me. It's cultural appropriation. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me as if I had just broke wind.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. First of all, she's a kid, so I'm not going to be her girl no matter what, because she was in her 20s and I'm going. Secondly, I think it's cultural appropriation in that we are now more visible. For whatever reason, we're more visible. We have access to social media. We have a presence on social media. And so a lot of times what used to be intimate things between us, it's become public and it's no longer private. The use of the N-word, girl, all sorts of other things, all types of uses of words.
Right. Except for one.
Which is, what's that? Oh, yeah, they still
they
don't have
know.
That one yet. They don't
they
know.
They don't know.
And
but
that's
not singular because
means so much, doesn't it?
We could be out in public. We could be in the middle of Trump's bedroom.
It has contact.
And
you let that loose.
Well, it's just in the, I'm sorry. Okay, let's just put us in the White House. Don't leave. Please don't leave. Please stay. I'm sorry.
The fact that somebody stupid is in the White House is a
Yeah. But we could be right in front of him and his, and somebody could go, and every black woman within earshot would know exactly what
almost
that is.
No one else would.
And it's not always audible.
Right. Sometimes it's just a look on the face.
I can give
that
you
just
my
a
eyes.
Look.
That's true.
The raise of an eyebrow.
The sigh and the tilt of a chin.
Mm-hmm. I think that that is uniquely owned by black women.
I think so. I think so. But this little girl called me.
I got
me,
some Latina sisters that will get.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Women of color. Women of color.
People who have been through some things.
Yeah, exactly. And are still going through some things. But was it wrong for me to check this girl so hard? I didn't call her names or anything. I didn't raise my voice. But I told her not to ever say that to me again. And then I complimented her on the gym.
You know what I do? I say, do you always talk like that?
Mm-hmm. I got arrested in New York because I told, there was a cop. It's a long story. I'm not going to tell the whole story. But the bottom line
they
is.
They arrested the wrong person because it involved can't a dog. Defend herself.
It involved a dog and the dog bit somebody and, you know, it's a whole thing.
I remember that.
But when the cop came over to me, she was saying, yo, why you play yourself like that? Yo, why you running? And I was like, huh? I wasn't running. I'm right here. But why you with you then? And she kept going on and yo. And finally, I said to her, why are you talking to me that way? I don't talk that way. And that's when my uppity ass was going to jail. Mm-hmm. Within 30 seconds, she said, turn around. Those cuffs were on me. And I was in the back of a car. Mm-hmm. And I spent the rest of my afternoon in a holding cell at the 26th
precinct.
Well,
you insulted her New Yorkies. See, that's different.
You think it was about the New York?
Yo. No,
maybe
different.
I don't know, but I still didn't want her talking to me like that. I was like that. I thought it was condescending, and I
feel like it is too. I don't, you know, anytime I hear someone other than us speak that way, I always go, does he always talk like that?
Mm-hmm. I think us and gay culture are appropriated so much now, and our overlap.
I agree.
Are appropriated so much because there's some weird, perverted admiration that quite often only shows up when it's time for somebody to try to look like they got, like they on fire or something. They are cool when it comes to everything else. Bottom line is, if you ain't paid your dues, you don't get to adopt my culture. If you have not lived through what we typically live through, if you can leave the house and not worry that the police might shoot you if you make one false move, don't say girl to me.
Right.
Don't
not like
ever,
that.
And you can never say nigga under any circumstances. Right. That's just unacceptable.
Right.
So, yeah. So I wasn't too hard on her.
I think that's a real time question because my grandmother sort of always taught me, and I didn't learn the lesson until long after she was gone and my thick skull got a little softer. You pick and choose your battles too, because we've been battling a long time. And if you battle every battle, when the war shows up, you got nothing.
You're exhausted.
And so what I've learned to do, and it's an art form, that I make more people crazy with silence than I mean.
Oh, you can give a look.
Oh,
I'm a
you
master.
You can stop somebody.
Silence is deadly. Sometimes.
People are unnerved because silence means you've got to spend time with that stuff floating between your ears and you don't know why.
Ears.
And I'm telling you, as somebody who used to like have like Ginsu knives, verbal Ginsu knives ready, the silence thing.
That works.
Oh, baby, I can take you to a place.
Well, you have to take oxygen out of fire.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
It has to have oxygen to
it's
burn.
It's elemental.
Mm-hmm. So you take it out,
there's
no fire.
Yeah.
Right?
Silence, a little body language, tilt of a shoulder, talk to the back of the head, equivalent to the hand. You heard me.
The back of the head is worse than
the
hand.
Yeah, the back of the head is, Yeah, the hand is very overt. The back of the head.
It's
nice to know that you've cut somebody deep and they don't realize it until after you've gone home.
And the other thing I think, too, if I let every release of ignorance touch me and take me there, I'm really the victim more than the person. I mean, I'm giving them more than they are entitled to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to learn that one the hard way because, there's a difference between reacting and responding.
Mm-hmm.
So
explain that. What do you mean?
I mean, I think we're trained to react. When something happens, you got to react. But when you take a moment, you take a breath, you take the, like you said, the oxygen, the response, your presence in the response.
Mm-hmm.
I decide how much of my anger you get because you can't handle full throttle.
Oh, no.
And I'm not going to give that you. You know what? And half the people out here who think that they're being racist, if they really understood, if they really got deep with racism, really, you're just a baby bigot. You don't have the power.
A baby bigot.
You don't have the power to be who you think you are, but you've been drinking too much of this juice, and you think by using certain language, or you think by whether you're intentionally trying to be bigoted or you're intentionally trying to be down with the people, you don't have that. You've not spent the time, and I'm not going to entertain that with you. So
you know, my response is to try to understand it. And I try to do that a lot of stuff. People say, you're too smart. You know, why are you asking that question? But so I saw a lady who had her hair locked, a white girl. And my first response was, how did you do that? Right. How did you get your hair locked? And she said, I just stopped brushing it. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. Well, why did you? You know, why did you want to do that? You know? Yeah. And she said, well, you know, I like it. I thought it was cool, blah, blah. And again, thank God in 2018, we can be whoever we want to be. But I'm just like, you know, why?
Yeah, and I think also hate is a card that's been handed. I mean, the more we traffic in that, and there's some instances where it's completely justified. And I'm not saying yours wasn't. I'm just sort of saying, I try to be a little, because I know I'm being played too. Like I'm supposed to.
Yeah, react.
You're
to
black.
That.
You're supposed to react when a white person. You're supposed to be that. And when you step back from that and you look at how that's been used against how it's created like an archetype, then I'm guilty too. I'm not going to be who you think I should be just because you hand me the card that you think is going to make me react. Please step back.
It's a form of manipulation.
Yeah. And it's an intellectual form of it because it, again, reduces us. I'm smarter than you think I am.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My skin color tells you a scintilla about who I am.
You know what? Speaking of skin color, when I am queen, and one day I will be, when I am queen, one of the things that I'm going to...
Wait, queen?
I cannot wait.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I cannot wait.
Well, I want you on my parliament, on my court.
Your court.
I do. You can be the creativity instigator for my
team. Royal Court of Chenault.
The Royal Court of Chenault. Yeah. One of the things that I will ban people from saying, and this is, well, not ban, strongly discourage. I don't like it when people, especially young people, say, well, I'm not going to get that job because I'm black, or they didn't hire me because I'm black, or the police stopped me because I'm black. Our being black in and of itself is a wonderful thing.
That was.
It's their problem. That other person's problem. They didn't hire me because they got a problem with me being black. The police stopped me because they got a problem with black people, not because I'm black.
Yeah.
I think being black is something to be celebrated.
I
can't remember the Zora Neale Hurston poem, but the one about the oyster knife, how she was not tragically colored.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way. And in my next life, I'm going to come back as a black lady again because I can't imagine being anything else that is this much fun.
I agree.
This is great.
And let me tell you, my grandmother, you know, born in 1925. Mm-hmm. Your grandmother was born in 1921. Mm-hmm. But born in 1925, when I graduated from high school in Romulus, which was my high school was probably 70% black, right? I moved to Dearborn, a place where my grandmother could not even stop her car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, dumbfounded. She was baffled. Like, you moving to Dearborn? Dearborn.
Yeah, Dearborn.
Mm-hmm. She called it.
Dearborn.
And I'm just like, yeah, the school is there, right? And she said, you know, y'all do all this stuff because you just never, you never thought you couldn't, right? And so I never thought that somebody did something to me or said something or reacted because I was black.
Yeah.
That just wasn't like not the first thing I thought. Like I said, they stupid, right? Not they did that because I was black. If I look at it later, but maybe some things may point to that, but it's usually because I think I can do whatever the hell I want to, because we all can, right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that I couldn't do it. And you know, yeah. So that, I think I have close friends that the first thing they leave with was it was a white man.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a stupid man, right?
Right.
And it doesn't matter because a black man acting that way would be stupid too. And so I think
it's an investment of energy.
Yeah, it is.
But I think it's learned.
Yeah, it is. It's not just learned. I think we used the word a minute ago, manipulation. It's to the benefit of what this American culture is. If we continue to pit ourselves,
More about what it used to be as I think about it, I think about more what it used to be. Because again, you know, growing up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, you had to have those kind of conversations with your children to keep them safe.
To prepare
because
them.
There were people out there that would just do stuff because they were black. But then I look at the next generation, my nephews and their friends.
Oh, they don't know no better.
My nephew's friends look like the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking at me like I'm stupid because I didn't know what Eid was. How am I supposed to know?
You didn't
know
what was?
Eid.
Oh, Eid al-Fitr?
No.
The holiday?
The holiday.
No, it's Eid al-Fitr.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But, yeah. And I'm like, we don't have to go to school because of Eid. What?
Right.
You know? And I'm thinking, another day off of school? But he went to a predominantly Arab school.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so all of these things, his good friend Sheik, who we call Sheikums. Sheikum's girlfriend wears hijab. She's okay. A beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. And she's white. Mm. I was like, Jordan is white. Right? My own ignorance. I expect it because he's Muslim. Mm-hmm. She's supposed to be Muslim.
And she wears hijab.
She wears hijab. And so I see her in the hijab and I think she's...
She must be of Arab descent or Persian descent.
She's not. And he told me she's white. I'm like, who's white? Right? So maybe really, I think that... It was important for my parents' generation, even my own generation, to have those conversations and to help our children be safe and understand that there was this force out there. But I think we're kind of getting away from that because really it's more about the haves and the have-nots, right?
You think it's more economical than racial or cultural?
Absolutely. I really
I don't know.
Do.
I think it's sometimes curious. Like, I really do try to get to know people. So we talk about things we can't stand. Never try to erase me in my black skin.
Right.
You know, so I'm not trying to erase myself. But I do try to get to know people as who they are. So I have friends across lines, you mm-hmm. know. But they're friends who, they're not going to look at me and erase me. They're right. friends. Sure. I'm bringing the whole Absolutely. Thing.
Right.
You know, Detroit, North, I'm bringing it all. And black nerd, all those things. Mm-hmm. If you can deal with it, you can deal with it. If not, but... It's been to my benefit to try to learn people because
Absolutely.
I don't want to always believe what's been told to me. Mm-hmm. I'm forever like, yeah, right. And I need to read it and see it and kick it and touch it for myself.
Yeah. Yep. Firsthand.
So, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the solution.
Right. Actually, we typically don't have that kind of intimate contact.
Exactly. Because again, as someone said, you see my skin color and you paint me with this whole brush mm-hmm. and all these things you've seen and heard. And really, I'm way more than that.
And so why do to other people what's been done to us?
Exactly.
But I also believe, like Maya said, when somebody shows me who they are.
You believe them.
Baby.
Immediately. Mm-hmm.
With the quickness.
Mm-hmm.
With the quickness.
Do you think that, or both of you, this question is really for everybody. Do you think that the interests of black women run contrary to the interests of white women in any way? Or are they parallel? Is it entwined like DNA, like a DNA string?
What are your easy question?
Okay, I'm gonna ask you. Let me ask you something.
Okay,
I'm
queen.
Ask you something else.
Okay, queen. She said, "Ask you."
No. I want to answer that question.
Okay,
because I think about, especially the current economic climate. Right, I think about my mom going to CVS or Kroger or the post office, and my mom was just like all the other women in there. Everybody was. Love their children. They are, you know, help their neighbor. She was just that type of person. She was a woman of the world. She was a good citizen of the world. Again, she loved her family. She wanted to, you know, take care of her house and all that kind of stuff. And just, you know, to live well for whatever. But I think we all want the same things.
Everybody
does. We really do.
Yeah. You want a safe place to lay your head? You want your kids to be okay?
We do. And... You know, when you get into all these things with these economic, and I believe it really is a real true economic thing, and thinking that I think I'm something because I have whatever I have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you make a determination that I think that because you are looking, whatever. Basically, everybody has the same interest, right? Mostly, especially women, mm-hmm. right? We have the same interest, but we get caught into these other influences that take us away from our main focus or what I think our main focus should be.
See, I disagree somewhat. I do think that everybody wants the same thing and that people have more in common than they have mm-hmm. distinguishing mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. You know, we are more alike than we are different. But I think that particularly in this country, and that's my primary experience. I've mm-hmm. lived in other places, but I've been here most of the time. There's a need for a perpetual underclass.
Absolutely.
And black folks have been targeted as the ones who should be that perpetual
Absolutely.
Underclass. When privatization of prisons began, prisons have to have bodies or they're not sustainable.
Absolutely.
And prisons have to have somebody to do the laundry and do the cooking and do the cleaning. And so all these businesses can benefit from these prisons, but the prisons have to have bodies, and the least valued bodies are bodies that look like ours, particularly men. So I do think that race is behind a lot of that. And it's always, I mean, that's what this country was founded on, is the notion that we gonna come over here and take y'all stuff. We're going to take your land and kill most of you. Those who were still around, we're going to make y'all live here in substandard conditions. And we're going to haul a whole bunch of other folk from someplace else who were sold by their own and who we just caught. And they are always going to be beneath us.
I attribute that to white men.
Yeah.
That's not a woman issue.
I don't know, because see, the thing that I was really trying to get at,
I don't know,
is,
if you look at somebody who is like, I do not want to bring politics here, but I will say, if you just look at some of the dominant elections lately and what white women have done in races,
they the one who pushed that fool to Pennsylvania Avenue.
I think there's a level of
college educated white women.
Yeah, but I'll tell you that some of them I talked to, they think that he would be good for their family so that their children can have opportunities and that kind of stuff. They weren't talking about all this other stuff. They really were focused on what they believed was what he could bring to the company for economics.
That's because it's not them, that they're not going to suffer from those policies, or they believe they're not going to suffer from those policies.
They believe that their family would benefit from those
policies. If you stand idly by while your husband owns people and mistreats those people.
Yeah,
I'm not getting mad, but you know. If you stand idly by, quietly by, and benefit from all of that, if you say nothing,
but most people don't own people. Most people like us, and most people have simpler interests. Right? They want their children to be able to go to college and get a good job.
At what cost? That's my question. At what cost? If you stand idly by, like, I'm thinking about Missy out on the veranda, fanning herself and asking Kizzy to bring her some lemonade.
Absolutely.
She might not be the one that goes down to the town square and buys Kizzy and takes Kizzy away from her mama, but she is willing to sit on that veranda and ask for her lemonade and sit idly by while entire people are being abused. That's some bullshit. I'm not. White women don't get a free pass to me.
But see, you painted all white women.
No.
Miss Anne.
Those. But that said, that's the kind of woman I'm thinking of.
Okay.
Is that
okay.
woman?
All right.
But one of the things that I wanted to get at, and we're kind of running low on time, but as long as they let us keep going, we're gonna keep going. Someone that I know posted on Facebook maybe a year and a half ago.
And if you saw it on Facebook, we know.
It's got to be true. It must
be
true. If it's on Facebook or in Jet Magazine, that's journalism at its finest.
Jet Magazine.
Anyway.
Lord.
She put on there that she somehow in her gut, she was not willing to embrace the Me Too movement fully. And she was trying to figure out why. And I suggested to her that, well, I know that I understand exactly how she feels, but I also told her that one of the reasons I look askance at the Me Too movement sometimes is because I want to know where all this outrage was, where all this organization was, where all this political pressure and all these changes in policy were, and successful changes, when we were saying, could you please get these police officers to stop killing us? Mm. Where was the outrage then? Is it a game of numbers where they're just more women generally have experienced all the Me Too bullshit? Mm-hmm. You know, I can't think of three people that I know well enough to know who have not been through just some nonsense with some man in the workplace or socially, anyplace else, on the street. Mm-hmm. So is it just numbers because that's something that we all do have in common? But we also all have loved ones who leave the home every day, who are outside living their lives every day. Why? Where were all of these? Where was, you know, Gwyneth and Ashley and all of them? Where Kate? Where were they when we were saying, make these police departments learn to do better? Mm-hmm. Make them stop killing us. Where were they? Where were they? I think it's because you focus on what is important to you.
Yep.
Without necessarily having the empathy to look at what is happening to others.
But you also, I mean, there's an element of, you also focus on what's been fed to you, too. And I think one of the things that sort of disturbs me so greatly about who occupies that place we call the White House is that being a person in the media, I feel like the media was wholly complicit in creating a joke of this man running. They did not take seriously what the flames that he was fanning from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
He showed you from the get-go, and yeah, I said get-go, who he was.
That's the real word.
And the media didn't have the ability to believe it. In the same way, division is fostered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. If you don't have access, if you don't do things in your own life to kind of poke a hole at it, you believe it's like a trick. Groupthink has a trickle down effect.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you are actively working in your own life to find the, you know, the curve, you sooner or later, you're a victim of it.
Do you think groupthink is human nature or is it taught? Is it learned behavior?
I think there's a manipulative aspect to it. And I mean, I really work against it. I don't want to fit into any box anybody's ever trying to put me in.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask me, and I am a contrarian because I think that's why I'm given a specific brain that's my own.
And that's why your grandma whooped you a whole lot.
Yes.
When you were little.
Yes. A whole lot. A whole lot.
Girl, fall in line. Don't make me take off my shoe.
What's the point of falling in line? I get to be here a short time. I need to know that I know what I know.
From your grandmother's perspective, she was trying to keep you safe.
Yeah, that's true.
And trying to keep you alive.
Because she thought that your mouth was going to get you killed.
I'm still here. Like
here you are.
I'm still
here.
You know, it's not 1920 or 1935 anymore
right.
either.
But
are you
in
sure?
her mind.
Sure?
Well, I don't know.
I'm sure. I'm pretty sure.
Yes, they used to hang
I was
us
living
from
in
trees.
Dearborn.
Dearborn.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and let's not joke about the progress that a lot of people die so that we could have. So,
absolutely.
However hard it is,
mm-hmm.
there are people, there's blood that's really been shed for mm-hmm. all of us, even the people who don't want to admit that we have value.
But back to your point, you know, you talked about the Me Too movement, but I think about, and I think about the opioid epidemic versus the crack war on drugs,
mm-hmm.
right? So we treated that
was
time.
Criminal behavior.
That was criminal behavior.
Now it's a medical condition.
Now it's a medical condition.
And it was always a medical condition. It should have been on both sides.
We only know deep waters on this show. Deep waters.
Deep waters.
That's
like we should start
question.
Quoting some Parliament
where's
Funkadelic.
Your easy
I don't
question?
Have any easy questions. I only have hard. Okay, on a lighter note.
Uh-oh.
Because
you all can't see, she sat up straight in her chair for a while.
Yeah, and I'm tucking my shirt in and trying to, you know. On a lighter note, did either of you see the big giant cow? Knickers?
Get back to your hard question.
I like the big giant cow. Did you see the big giant cow?
Who turns into cows?
I don't know what
did
the
you
big,
see the big giant cow?
I don't even know.
There's a big giant cow. No, he's in Australia. His name is Knickers. And at the shoulder, he is 6'5", and he weighs almost 3,000 pounds.
Is he a real cow?
Well, see, that's the thing. The Washington Post said.
I can't believe you asked her that question.
The Washington Post, she's encouraging me. The Washington Post is saying, nah, this was a
Lord.
Sham. He's not that big. He's just a steer. And they photographed him and did these videos with him next to a smaller type of cow.
But you know what? Don't you wonder why they call him Knickers?
That's a good question. Why would they call him Knickers?
I'm asking you because I'm sure you know.
No, I don't. I don't.
And she will tell
and
you.
And they're
the next
Australian.
Show.
So maybe, does that mean, is that like naming a cow panties or draws? Okay, let's get back to the difficult questions.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all of us are unmarried, correct?
No, I'm married.
You're married?
Married?
Who are you married to?
For a long time married.
You married Dwayne?
Yeah.
I ain't heard you mention Wayne. I thought something happened to Wayne. I wasn't going to ask.
Well, it wasn't on the show, but.
I'll give you the unmarried perspective.
Okay, as an unmarried woman. Living in the Midwest, living in Detroit specifically, how do you feel about dating now as an unmarried, grown-ass woman, not no 20-something who's like
so here we go. I'm
on
way
Tinder.
Outside the box.
Okay.
I think dating is a wonderful thing.
And why do you think that?
Because
she owns a gym.
It's fun.
She don't need nobody to take care of her.
It's fun to meet new people and learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that my perspective is because I never take any expectations on a date mm-hmm. with me when I meet somebody for the first time. I expect we're going to have a good time. And if we do, then if we want to do it again, we do. And if we don't want to do it again, we don't. I don't take a representative. I do some stuff like go and run or do something fun where I can sweat and look ugly because I ain't trying to look all pretty for you because I ain't always all pretty. I'm almost never perfect, right?
Mm-hmm. Almost
I'm
never
perfect.
So, she caught herself. Good save,
yeah.
Donna.
So, So I don't have any expectations but to have fun.
What's the deal breaker for you?
I'm going to tell you. So
she lowered her voice.
She did. One time I went on a date with this guy a long time ago. And the only thing he had to talk about was the fact that I was late. So if I wasn't late, then what would we have talked about?
That was his conversation?
That was his conversation.
You're late.
Almost everything
you
was
late.
Back to we were late. And the other thing he did was objected to me putting on lipstick.
Really? Why was that objectionable to him?
How long did the date last?
Because I'm going to tell you what it is. Oh, maybe a couple of hours. Because and I know this is true because I was engaged to a guy that was exactly like that. He has a vision of
what you're supposed to be.
What I'm supposed to
be. You went on the date while you were engaged? Oh, that's a story.
No, that's not. No, oh, okay. That was way long time ago. That's another podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole.
But yeah, so he had a vision of who he thought that I was because he knew me from the gym.
Oh. Right?
No makeup, sweaty, right. Funky, you know,
low
whatever.
Low maintenance and prompt.
No maintenance, right? Mm-hmm. And then here I am putting on. And so he's like, no, but you know you was late.
Oh, Lord. Now, did you find him? Where did you find him?
I found him at the gym.
Nicole, where did you find Wayne?
I'm old. High school.
High school? Ooh. Get out.
Can we? Oh, Lord.
That is beautiful.
It is, isn't it?
It's old.
I've only seen you twice since I moved back last year, or year before last. So, and you haven't mentioned him, so I didn't know if something happened to him.
Well,
if
he saw me working. He doesn't traffic in the same spaces.
Right.
So he didn't have to go into my boring world. He does not.
And I remember Wayne as a very, very, when we were neighbors, he's a very, very nice guy, very laid back.
Mm-hmm. Very laid back.
Cute. Very laid back.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And cute as he can be.
I mean, I'd like the whole, well, he wasn't like your high school sweetheart.
Why are you acting like maybe cheesy?
Were you sweet on
just
him?
Come on, he was high school sweetheart.
Oh, that is
you
beautiful.
Dated in high school? Did y'all go to the prom together?
Oh, Lord. It's with a T.
Okay. Lord.
Yeah, we did.
You went to the prom together?
Yeah. Did he go to New York with you?
Yeah, they were married. Yeah. Yeah.
They are married.
Yeah. They were married when she was living in New York.
Wow.
I met them when they had just moved back from New York the second time,
wow.
I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, we lived on the same block.
So how many years have you been married?
26.
5011.
Awesome.
26 years.
We always say, well, we have a daughter who is 16, so there's life before her and life after her.
Wow.
Yeah.
AD, after daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My sister and my brother-in-law met each other when they were 13 and 14.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they're still married.
And there are some stories of people even beyond that, like... You know, they were in the cribs. No, I'm kidding.
Maybe they were 15 to 16.
But still, they couldn't drive.
But I know a lot of friends.
He could drive. His dad bought him. His dad had built him a car.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's another story. But they still act like they just started dating.
He's going to be at your house every day.
Yeah.
No matter what. There's
just
no
relationships
escaping.
In general. So.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Well, we're going to wrap this up. And I would like to end with each of you telling us, everybody, what you'd like to talk about next time. I'm going to give Nicole a minute because she's twisting up her lid. Are you ready? Can you answer that now? Because I want it to be a spontaneous response. I don't want it to be a well thought through, you know, world peace and diplomacy.
I want to talk about the barriers to Black women becoming healthy.
Oh, okay.
And like hair. Like my man said, he don't want me to lose my ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know.
I think that's a fantastic topic because I think that's another thing that we narrow in on because health is seen as physical. But what about well-being?
Mm-hmm.
What about self-care? What about scare care?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Scare care.
Scare care.
Yeah, do the thing you know you should do. Life is short.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
That's true. Well, I would like to talk about...
She's the queen.
Well, I do want to talk about my rise to the throne. But in addition to that, I would like to kind of keep it light by just talking about
Bitcoins.
Excuse me?
Bitcoin.
Big cows. Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin, giant cows. I want to talk about elder care because that's the situation that I'm in right now. And I don't want to talk about it like, you know, oh, woe is me. But I am hoping that we can share some resources. And I know you all have done what I'm trying to do right now. And y'all came through it looking good. And I feel like I'm just dissolving like the Wizard of Oz witch, where I'm like, oh, what a world.
We'll tell you that is normal.
For me to be melting?
Absolutely.
You know, I think one thing is not to be funny. You know, there's that movie we saw a long time ago called Lion King. And there's a song, you know, this thing, The Circle of Life.
The Circle of Life.
Oh, and you don't know what that means until you stand in the circle.
Yeah.
And you are standing in the circle.
I'm in the circle right now.
Yeah. And you'll be grateful that you stood there.
Well, I'm grateful now. I'm grateful now that I have time with them. But as you both know, there are times when you think, oh my God, what is happening here?
Absolutely.
How can, I can't stand here and watch
that
this.
That is totally normal.
Yeah.
And it's real humbling when you think about the fact that it's going to happen to you too.
That's another thing. Is it going to happen to me? Because I'm going to think I can beat it somehow.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that relates to health.
Yeah.
So thank you everybody for listening to the Virgin episode of Uppity. We hope that you got something good out of it. We hope that you at least got a couple of laughs out of it. And I look forward to listening to my guests next time and having you join us.
And if you didn't, keep it to yourself.
Have a very uppity week.
Have a very uppity week. Hold that head up high. Don't let nobody tell you ain't the finest thing going.